Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about. And the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and it's another week of American Tennis. And for a change, we have some weather in the south where we're going to be able to get outside and play tennis. And spring has sprung, the grass is riz. I wonder where my typing teacher, you say tab key is, you know, but... little bit corny there, but I'm feeling a little bit better today. We've got passed some big barriers with our sport. Big deal in the NCAA cabinet, February the 10th, saying that we're going to use traditional scoring again for the NCAA tournament this year. Now, the ITA came right back, folks. Right back the next day, as they've done on three other occasions. They didn't like the call made by the NCAA cabinet, and they said they came right back, and they've sent around directives saying that in non-conference match, when you have interconference matches, you've got to use our NOAAD scoring, you know, and they are frantically digging their heels in. They've lost. This is unbelievable. They've lost the statistics. Can we go through the statistics here again one more time? Well, I'm going to do that in a minute. Let me do the intros first, but I'm fired up to give you the statistics again here and get into something much deeper, and I want to start talking about tennis again instead of the politics of tennis. This is taking up so much of my time. My God, I wish I made some money with all the hours it's taking up to deal with this politics of tennis. And I need some help out there, folks, and everybody's voting and on board. And my friend, a good friend of mine, said, look, traditional tennis won. Male athletes, 72%. Female athletes, 88.2%. Women's head coaches, 73%. Men's head coaches, over 50%. Everywhere you turn, people are defending and fighting to defend our sport and the traditions here. But it has been the hot button, and we will talk briefly about it, but I promise you we're going to get on and continue with momentum and match flow principles that we were talking about. We've got to get back into tennis. The one thing I do want to talk about today, too, and add to the momentum is talk about the pecking orders of tennis and how to overcome those. And they are so ingrained, aren't they? I mean, isn't it amazing how players, if they're the favorite players, are able to win at the end? The underdog might start out fast and get ahead, but they're not comfortable leading. And then at the end, our beautiful, beautiful scoring system, our beautiful sport makes it to where when you gain ground, you learn how to keep ground. And if you don't, you're quickly thrown out of that arena. But anyhow, this is the UR Tennis Network. I'm Chuck Creasy. This is American Tennis now in our third year, just about to complete our third year, about ready to start our fourth year. And thanks, Jason Haynes with UR Tennis Network. You can listen to Jason Haynes College Connection 2 hours from right now, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Central Time on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and then letter S, Network. Jason Haynes also recruited the great Lisa Stone. Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program is on Tuesdays, and also Lisa Stone's website and blog is called Parenting Aces. She is up to date and on the ball with the technology, and boy, oh boy, does she have some great and interesting stuff going on each and every week, and she is up to date with what's going on in the tennis world. I wanted to mention also J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis blog, We Coach Tennis Facebook, We Coach Tennis program that he has on Tuesdays at noon. Go to We Coach Tennis radio program on the Blog Talk Radio Network. On the Blog Talk Radio is the form here, folks. And J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis program is usually every Tuesday as well. And he really, really gets things out on the cutting edge and stirred up, worked up, and solved a lot of times. But it's always entertaining, and he has had wonderful numbers with his blog, his Facebook, and his programs. Go to my website at chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E, chuckcreasy.net. You can get every program that I have had, every American Tennis Radio program that I've had. You also can get my books, my 4 tennis books. I've written 6 books over the years, and Coaching Tennis is the one out there that's still going, and that's probably the one that's the most thorough. And you know, if I needed to update it, there'd be a couple things I'd put in there, but pretty much Labor of Love, those things. The first one took me over 10 years to write in the old days, and I'm very, very proud of those books. And they all had to be published. You could not be self-published back in those days. But I actually hand-wrote that first book, Total Tennis Training, and had to take all the pictures, had an English professor edit it, and I did it the old-fashioned hard way. It did take about 10 years. So I'm so proud of those books. They're on the ChuckCreasy.net, also my camps, my Total Tennis Training camps, and the other stuff. And I'm trying to get the blogs updated. But, folks, I've got a new handout coming out also called The 10 Reasons Why NOAD is a No-Go for Player Development. I've got them down to 10, and I've cleaned this up, and it is going out everywhere it can here really soon. And I'll talk more about that. Coming up. Again, this UR Tennis Network, and I want to get off and running here and do the politics, and then we'll get on with the momentum control part, which is the main part of today's program. If you want to call in and you have comments, it's area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. So, Tuesday, February 10th, 2015, the NCAA announced that the cabinet that we're going to play traditional scoring educational format, the one we've had for 100 years in the sport of tennis, for NCAA tournament. And my, oh my, did ITA have another tizzy. These guys are something. And I am just amazed that they just go forward as if we are the dummies out there. They're the ones that are the enlightened ones. They are the ones that are looking after the welfare of tennis. And Again, Thomas Jefferson said, in matters of principle, you stand like a rock. In matters of method, you can flow with the stream. And I think that's maybe the base problem right there, folks, as we get into these Civil War-like type campaigns that are going on and the splits. It's a matter of ideology. I mean, I think the green ball, the red ball, all the different colors, and those good teaching tools, they weren't a problem until the USTA said you have to use them. That's the deal, the mandate, and that goes against the very core of what American feels in their, down deep in their bones about freedom and our ability to make decisions on our own. And then when the governing body comes in and says, we know better, you got to do this, then people's backs get up and you got a revolution and in some cases a civil war. And the ITA pretty much has done the same over the years. They pretty much have done what they want to do, and then they backpedal and sort of ramp up their reason how they've done it and why they're doing it, and they justify, you know, they're pragmatically, or what is that philosophy? Is it existentialism or pragmatism? One of those where the end justifies the means. That's, well, you all know what I'm talking about there, but basically the end justifies the means. They're the enlightened ones. We are just the serbs out there, the servants that are out there in the trenches, but they know what's best for tennis. This is a matter of principle. It's a matter of principle. You stand like a rock. And Edmund Burke says, and every week I quote this, that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. Listen, this week I got to tell you, along this line, this week, you know, I get up in the middle of the night and sometimes I can't sleep. So I'll go to this, the talk on Netflix is amazing. I've always loved movies. They slow my mind and help me sleep. But I've been watching these 30 times 30s, and boy, are they good. Go to those and see some of these things. The No Moss thing about Sugar Ray Leonard is unbelievable. Some of these about Requiem for the Big East, the thing about the Big East, the thing about all of them are very, very good. But this is the one you need to see. Make sure you say of miracles and men, of miracles and men. Now, when I first flipped through this, they only gave it 4 stars, and I said, oh, that's the Russian side of the miracle. I already know the story of the miracle, 1980. But I went to it yesterday again, and let me talk about what our country is about here a second. Of miracles and men. The miracle was the Miracle on Ice in 1980, and we've all seen that fantastic movie, Kurt Russell, and it's one of the best sports movies out there. And we were thrilled. We all know where we were at when the Miracle on Ice happened. But the men part of it, I guess it's a playoff of Mice and Men or something, but of miracles and men, the playoff of it is so fantastic because it talks of the Russian side of this, the Soviet side. And it starts out with the beautiful artistry. Taritsov, or what I think his name is Taritsov, or Torsov, he was the developer of Soviet hockey. And they said he was an artist. He knew that he could not catch the Canadians by doing it the Canadian way, so he developed his own. And what an innovator, a creative innovator, even in the Soviet communist society, he developed this innovative way of teaching kids and teaching people, and he brought them up. And of course we all know that the Soviets dominated from 56, 60 up until 80. Now the Miracle on Ice was the only thing, the only crumb of bread the USA got in there as far as the Olympics, and it was a big deal for us. But it tells the Soviet side, but it's beautiful. They called him the artist of the hockey, the musician. He was the creative one. And then they put the other guy in there who they called the accountant, who was trying to get everything right. And as I've said so many things, the American way needs both. We need the creativity of doing right things, but we also do the manager side. That's the leadership side is doing right things. The manager side is doing things right. So the second guy they brought in, the guy that lost to the Americans in Herb, Coach Herb Brooks there was the accountant guy, you know, the guy who was just all about detail. But it was a beautiful, beautiful story. So what the clincher was at the end, they had one of their top players was going to defect. And what he ended up doing, he did not do it the cowardly way and just defect and stay over here when the Russians came over and played against the New Jersey Islanders. You know, just like you should do, he said, I want to go back and do it the right way. He went back, and they were chastising him like crazy. And he went to the Minister of Defense, I guess the number two guy behind Gorbachev or whatever, whoever the leader was back then. He went to him and just did what you need to do and man up and go and went right to the and said, look, I want to go to the United States. And the guy, he said, got up and screamed at him, you know, we can send you to the Gulag. We can send you to Siberia. We can send you. But he went in and did it that way, and that's how he came to the U.S. And he did this in such a way of manhood and such a brave way. It was incredible. So watch that. And this should not take away from our 1980 tremendous Miracle on Ice, but he showed all of his medals, all the gold medals, and he has this one silver one that they got. And he said, oh, let me push this one to the back. And to the Russians, this was sort of a speed bump in their great journey as hockey players. But the freedom that we have in the United States of America, folks, is something that is doesn't just go for the politics and the government. It goes for our tennis, too. And we need freedom. As they're developing these systems with computers and everybody's getting the systems down for doing things right, we need to remember that we need to do right things. And doing right things meaning be innovators, stand up, be different, and innovate your own programs. The guidelines that USTA, ITA, and these government or these programs, these bureaucracies, are fantastic. They're good, and these are good people who work in there. But you're an American citizen. The United States of America gives you the ability to, and the right and the duty to criticize those things in a good way that you need to. Remember to address issues, not people, and you can say anything you want. And I'm going back through all my stuff, and I try like crazy to not address people by name. Just say these organizations, you can tell them they're dumb and they're wrong and they're doing the crummy things, and you crumb bums, don't do that with these organizations. But with the men, with the women who serve these organizations, they are good people. Their ideology has to go first with the company they work for, and that's just the way that is. So anyhow, so that's a long introduction. But Tuesday, February 10th, the NCAA, We won this battle. And anybody fighting traditional scoring, we won it twice. We won it in the fall at the NCAA cabinet. And the ITA came out and they were complaining and they went around and said, no, we've got to still do no ad because we say so. We're the bosses. No, you're not. You're coach's organization, ITA. You're coach's organization. You represent the people. You represent the coaches. USTA, I think, you know, you guys too. You represent the people of the United States of America who love tennis. And to join you or to not join you is our choice. And thank God that you are there, and thank God you are helping us. But you are not the end-all, know-all. We need innovation. We need people who will stand up, speak out, and say those things that need to be said. In the end, we hope we get a consensus. And in the end, we hope we get the best systems that do not impose upon our freedom. But once they impose upon our freedom, forget it. We need to stand up. The people have spoken. The coaches and players have spoken. Male players, 72%. Female players, 88.2%. Want traditional scoring. Do not want no ad scoring. The coaches have spoken. Women are overwhelming. Men are about 50-50. But the men have been having this slammed on us for a long, long time. And what the heck is going on with you college coaches out there? If you don't like this, stand up and say so. You know, these guys, what are they going to do to you? They're going to say you can't be ranked. Well, have you ever thought about why they have 75 rank? They have 75 teams ranked so that they have leverage over you trying to get ranked 74th or 73rd or 58th or 61 or 42. And who wants to be ranked there anyway? Think about this. Southern Cal or North Carolina or Duke or Clemson or Georgia, any of these teams, if they get ranked 44th in the AD season, they're embarrassed. You know, for the smaller schools and things, we think, oh, we get a ranking. Well, what is that ranking? 951, 75th, 74th. The only reason that ITA has that many rankings is to get our dues. You get to $500 for the scorebook. Also, the leverage they have is to keep us out of their tournaments if they don't want to run the tournaments. Other than that, the ITA is a coaches organization. It's a coaches union. You got to pay $500. If it's something different, then we need to know about it. It's not. Otherwise, we would have to pay the $500 every year for a scoring book, which is wrong. So anyhow, but we won this battle. And the only thing that's irritating is the ITA came back and they have leveraged. They've sort of thrown their weight around arrogantly once more and said, you got to go ahead and play their traditional, you got to play no ad scoring. Now, the leagues got together once again, all of the conferences, and they said, once again, they voted. And in our conference, it's 100% traditional scoring. The ACC is using traditional scoring. The Big Ten is using traditional scoring. I think the Big South has been Big South Southern Conference. Now, a few of these conferences, the one, the Big 12, which is actually the Big 6, it's only six teams left as far as tennis. They're a little bit nervous out there because they've dropped tennis in the men's side in the northern part of the Big 12. Has nothing to do with scoring system, though. Nothing. It has all to do with money, with Title IX issues, and well, money. Money. Let's just leave it at that. And it's going to probably get worse in a lot of places for sure because of what's coming down the pike with all of our sports. But the truth of the matter is this no-ad ruse is just something that's been so irritating, it's unbelievable. So I'm going to very quickly, first of all, we won that battle. We just got to claim victory, you know, and don't let people keep coming back and say, no, but, coaches and players don't want it. Do you hear me, ITA? Coaches and players don't want it. Folks, I'm coming out with these really soon, the 10 reasons why no ad or no goes. Okay, no ad is not a rule of tennis, number one. Number two, no ad devalues the elements of conditioning and endurance. We all know that for the outcome of the competition. Number three, no ad promotes skewed results. Okay, now, how does that happen? Traditional scoring has always been an accurate measure for our sport. And, you know, folks, the skill to overcome pecking orders and the normal rites of passage that players have to go through in order to emerge, evolve, and to develop have been there for over 100 years. These accurate measures are from traditional scoring. Randomness is the NOAD, is promoted by NOAD. NOAD, it accelerates parity. This is the deal. Did you know Southern Cal got beat by Tulsa this week in college tennis? Now, how in the world can that happen? How in the world can that happen without this no-ad scoring? It can't. It would never happen without no-ad scoring, and I'm wondering how the coaches are feeling out there that are taking hits because it accelerates parity, pecking order. No-ad rewards ball striking, folks. Skills more than point construction skills. Point construction is the hard thing to learn. Ball striking has been ramped up about to the level that it can be now. You wonder why Federer and the great players, Djokovic and Murray and these guys, why they stay on top. It's because they have ball striking, but they also can develop points as well. It's a shame if we use no ad. Whenever you use no ad, it rewards the ball striking, not the point playing, point construction. Folks, did you know that no ad scoring is really worth two games. That 1 point is worth two games. Now, everybody understands that on the 4-2 game. When you're up 4-2 or down 4-2, it either becomes 5-2 or 4-3. But every game, it's 2 points. It's two games. Every deciding point, every deciding seventh point, it's two games. It's the one you should have had, the one they have now. If it's the first game of the match, they're up 1-0 instead of you. Now it's going to take you winning two games to get up by one, which you would have been had you not had that net cord, that stupid rule that they have for serving. That was done primarily. Do you all know about this in men's tennis? We have this no-let rule. The ball hits the net and it goes in. They do that in world team tennis. Well, they did it primarily because some high-profile players were cheating a lot. And what happened was every time they got ace, they just call a let. Well, instead of addressing that issue with the high-profile players, they developed this silly rule about the net court, and it's awful. But you get that on the 3-3 point, it's worth two games. Or 40-40 point, it's worth two games. NOAD eliminates the war zones and the importance of conversion points. Conversion points mean learning three in a row starts to flow. Three in a row starts to flow, which we talk about in NOAD with momentum principles. You always limit it to between 4 and 7 points, the duration of every game in NOAD scoring. This eliminates the situational things that happened. And it does not teach youngsters the discipline that they need to work through the war zones, what we call them. One's ability to win 2 points in a row, for example, to break serve, is maybe the greatest puzzle of all that we have to learn how to solve. Just as well, learning how to carry a lead is critical to becoming excellent. NOAD doesn't teach these things. Again, it's a bastardization. It's an abbreviation. It's just plain wrong. 7, NOAD promotes momentum swings and negates the differences. Random momentum swings and negates the small differences that a person's skill base that might become a big advantage as the match goes on. In other words, I have a slice backhand, you don't. Late in a match, this matters a lot. I have a kick serve, you don't. Just a little advantage, a little bit extra, that goes a long way and becomes big difference. When the games need to evolve and get to a deeper place where the stronger player can separate themselves from the weaker player, folks. 8, you know what, its highest claim, number 8, NOAD promotes excitement instead of the more enduring element of drama. I always said we have an Alfred Hitchcock movie, NOAD is a slasher movie. Excitement diminishes with each occurrence, whereas drama intensifies with each denial. The overwhelming majority of players are just opposed to NOAD. We've already read that statistics at 9, but listen to this. A coach told me this earlier this week. To abbreviate or change a scoring system is for political and media gain. Basically, no one is bigger than the game of tennis. It is absolutely wrong. If you look at this as a principle, not a whimsical thing, if you look at our scoring system as a principle of the game, we need you in this fight. Stand up, speak out, address issues, not people, and nobody can have fault. Abbreviations do not inspire. They will not sustain interest for a long time, and they don't sustain anything that is of value. Our wonderful scoring system it's historical. It's a sacred heirloom. Its depth should be honored. And daggone it, if I was the leader of this, I hate politics. I would never get in those situations where I have to sit in a desk all day. But if I was the leader, here's the compromise. USTA, this is all you need to do. You guys up there in White Plains, this is all you need to do. You come out with a TV format, an abbreviated format for our TV matches or for your Showtime matches that you're trying to put on, and you leave it at that. But stay out of the deal with we out here that are trying to educate all of our youngsters, and to all of us who are trying to bring our kids along to honor and respect the game, like the great game of chess that it is, and the depth that it has, and the beauty and the artistry that it has. The scoring system is a sacred heirloom. It's that simple. You're not bigger than it. We're not bigger than it. You need to honor the game, or it will not honor you. We'll be right back talking about momentum. Let's get off this politics stuff.
Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camp. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
This is American Tennis. Coach Chuck Creasy every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network. And look, we started last week in our instructional series on momentum control and match flow. And I think it's important to first talk about what, when we talk about the pecking order of tennis, we need to talk about that thing that is probably more powerful. All of us know about it. Have you ever noticed how the favorite players usually win in tennis? The underdogs usually can lead, but they're not comfortable at the end of the match moving forward, and how they fall behind. And favorites usually win in tennis. And maybe that's why people are so anxious to push forward this no-ad scoring, because it does skew results and allows underdogs to really win the games with winning one point at the end instead of the two that it's so hard. But I want to. This is real important to understand about the pecking order. You're either a favorite or you're not, and within being favorite or whether you're not, there's four different levels. You are either favored and dominant with your skill set. You're either favored barely, you're an underdog where you have a chance to win, you're an underdog where you don't have a chance to win. Now, if you are in a certain skill set, a physical skill set, understand that, and the other person is two levels better than you, no chance. Their physical skill set will overcome your skill set. If you are in a skill set that is two levels below a person's, forget that. You can't win. Or if you're two levels above, they can't win usually. But basically, most of the time you play, you have a chance to win with your skill set, or you wouldn't be at that tournament. You wouldn't even be in that ballpark. But checkpoint one is a skill set where you're the underdog. You play close, but you usually lose. This isn't, the underdog that they'll play loose at first, and at the end they get tight. And, they say that serving, I saw the statistic somewhere, but serving out a match is the hardest thing to do in any sport. It's harder than making a field goal at the end of the game, making free throws at the end of the game, striking out the last batter's relief pitcher. It's the hardest thing to do because you usually, as an underdog, play with your worst level against the person's best level. And serving out the match usually is extremely hard to do. It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of work and skill to be able to learn how to carry leads. And carrying leads are the critical thing. Checkpoint one is where you're the underdog and you'll play close, but you never really lead. You catch up, fall behind, catch up, fall behind, catch up, fall behind. You might even win the second set, but in the third set you fall behind and then catch up and fall behind. This is a checkpoint one situation usually. Now, because basically this is the beauty of our scoring system too. When you're behind, almost everybody plays well from behind. It's a matter of toughness. But when you're tied, only the confident player will lead. The underconfident player does not do well when they get ahead. They usually get tight and start choking. It's just a beautiful thing about our sport. And ultimately, most people play a little bit worse when they're ahead, but when the confident player at the end of the match, the favorite player is comfortable leading, and it's that simple. In the games, in the sets, and in the matches, the favorite player is comfortable leading, and that's that simple. So this pecking order thing is very profound. Checkpoint one is where you just don't ever lead. You tie up, fall behind, tie up, fall behind, but you'll play close but lose. Checkpoint two now becomes interesting. This is where these are your hero matches where you learn to win as the underdog. The other person's favored, they're seated higher, but that you basically are able to carry the lead for a little bit of time, and it's dramatic, dynamic, and you get your upsets. These are checkpoint twos, and everybody loves the checkpoint two matches when a player gets hot and they start making a run. You see this with players at tournaments often where they'll start making runs and they'll get comfortable carrying the leads as the underdog. Checkpoint three is the toughest but the most important level in pecking order. Checkpoint three is when you have to learn how to carry leads. This is you're the favorite and you're playing somebody that's physically good enough to beat you, but mentally you have a little bit of an edge. This is where you'll come off the court and you'll say, Coach or Mom or Dad, I played terrible. I can't believe it. I almost lost this person. I was down three set points. I had to win 7-6, 6-1. But they never really led. They weren't comfortable, but you felt that pressure. You heard the hoofbeats behind you the whole time, and you had to deal with this checkpoint three pressure. And then checkpoint four is where you win going away. These are tune-up matches where you're just too good mentally, and the person could beat you physically again, but you're not two levels ahead. You're one level better. But they can't get any comfort in moving forward. It's a get-ahead-and-stay-ahead match. Call them get-ahead-and-stay-ahead. And, again, these checkpoint one is where you're the underdog and, you know, you play close but lose. Checkpoint two, you learn how to win as the underdog. Checkpoint three is where you're the favorite. This is the one where you're – and let's see, how can I need to put this on radio. I usually say when you're – Bahawkus, when your rear end starts to quiver, you still have to deliver. And the big deal there is you've got to get used to winning when you're supposed to win. I've always, when I coach players, I always know that one of the parts of the process is after they arrive on the scene and start getting some wins, I must get them a lot of checkpoint. Three matches where they learn how to win and beat the people they're supposed to beat. And when they can do this, they move forward again. But then checkpoint four, you win going away. Everybody hates the checkpoint three matches. Everybody hates them because these checkpoint three matches expose your weaknesses. They don't feel good. They're ugly. You got to do a lot of things with discipline when you're ahead. When you win in checkpoint three, it's about discipline. It's about doing your warm-up right. It's about taking care of business, making first serves when you're ahead. And just basically confronting the situation and not ducking it. And kids hate checkpoint threes. And Mom and Dad, if you're setting a schedule up for your youngsters never avoid the checkpoint three matches. That's why we always say the best strategy for scheduling is one-third plus one-third plus one-third. It's one-third of the time you can schedule above where it's, you know, you're physically strong enough to play maybe a checkpoint one match. You're allowed to do that for yourself. One-third of the time you schedule those matches that you're supposed to win, checkpoint threes and checkpoint fours. There is no bad win in tennis. Do you hear me? There is no bad win in tennis. And I cannot tell you the amount of times that I've had a player that's struggling, and I'll get them checkpoint three and four wins. I'll make win checkpoint fours. I'll have them beat the manager. I'll have them beat the last person on the team. I'll just have them win set after set after set so they get used to converting the games in regular scoring and no-add scoring. There is just a terrible, terrible loss of reference where your players are at. It's disgusting that you – doesn't matter how hard you train, sometimes when you play no-add, it's about the roll of the dice or the – it's just a bad, bad system. The brilliance of our scoring system is that you have to win by two. So checkpoint one matches where you play up or okay, one-third of the time. One-third you play with people you're supposed to beat, and one-third of the time are your rival matches. That's the best way to schedule. Hey, listen, with scheduling, best thing I ever heard, Frank Salazar, where he was one of my players back in the early 90s, and he works with lots of youngsters now and is one of the best coaches out there. But Frank came up with this. He said, I do all my scheduling on a clock-like basis, coach. Instead of the 12 hours, I have the 12 months. I put January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August through November. And then what I'll do is I'll have four key times where I want my players to peak, four key times where I want my players to max out what they're doing. And let's say it's the four Grand Slams if you're coaching a player that's playing Grand Slams. That would be nice. Or it could be three state championships and one regional championship or something. But he said these four times, he says, I will build the intensity for this with three or four tournaments in a row. And he said, you always rest, come off a rest, you train, then you win, and you win. This would be checkpoint four, checkpoint four. Then you challenge at checkpoint three. Then what you do is you might play that big event, the Grand Slam or that big event, by the third week, probably not the fourth for youngsters, but the third week, two tune-up tournaments. Then you play that big tournament. And then here's the key that I always put in there when I talk to parents or with players, always. After that big event, if you have a great result, you sit on it. You sit on it a week or 2 weeks and let it soak in and you enjoy it. You enjoy it. And if you lose and you don't feel like it's a good result, you always go out and you play another checkpoint four event and you carry the trophy away. You carry that trophy with you, and then you take your rest period. No, never go to the rest period on a downer with basically something like, I don't want to play tennis anymore. I'm doing terrible. I just need a break. Never, ever, ever do that. Always go on and up, and then go back to work when you're down. Go back to work when you're down. These are important things, but the pecking order tennis reigns supreme. Pecking order is incredibly powerful. And, I often will tell people the things that are screwed up in coaching, what we do wrong is we schedule poorly and we overschedule, underschedule. And a lot of the things in college you can't control anymore. They give you such limited time, limited dates, and that's a lot of the reason why you don't see the grooming of players anymore in our collegiate system. It's just awful since early 1990s. They're making it into an activity after school instead of a sport. Daggone it, I wanted to be a symphony orchestra director, and they made me a band member. What the heck? I wanted to be in the orchestra. They're putting me in the band. But it's very aggravating. The dumbing down is bad. And I don't know where it comes from. I get on politics again, but See, look, socialism in anything. Anytime people get stuff for free, when you give participation trophies, or anytime you get stuff for free, everybody will take something for free, but nobody's proud of it. Kids can get a participation trophy. They like it for about 30 minutes, but they're not proud of it. Don't give 38 trophies every time you have a tournament. Give one, maybe two. Then the kids will start striving for them. Then kids will be hungry for them again. But socialism does not inspire. It really is one of those things that people think you're being a nice person, you're helping everybody out. Yeah, but we need maybe some of that thinking about participation with introductory things or participation activities, but we absolutely do not need it with performance activities. You know, we shouldn't do it, and absolutely should not. So, well, let's move on here to the momentum control tactics. So pecking order is important. We'll talk about more about that, but boy, it is a powerful thing. So how do you overcome pecking order? You come overcome it with being able to be proactive under pressure. When you're proactive under pressure, you have a better chance of being successful under pressure. Most of the time, the top players, the lead dogs, those who are dominant, those who are stronger, the favorites, they will be proactive down at crunch time. Most of the time, the underdogs are reactive. Momentum tactics, I've started again in 1979, and I did it primarily in trying to get players to be more proactive. And yes, we did play no-ad scoring a lot in the 80s, and I saw a lot of players who should have been, could have been, would have been, not develop because of this system. Most of the time, they were the players who developed points, not just the ball strikers. Ball strikers flourish more. The point players, or those who have to have point construction, do not flourish as much. But there's some eight principles I came up with last week. Go back and listen to my show from last week that I came up with. The first one is about grouping of points. Bob Love conversion rules. Three in a row starts the flow. Three in a row starts the mow. Three in a row is magical in tennis, because if you don't win the first point of the game, you have to win three in a row or four out of five to be successful. You must win 3 points in a row. And that's the only way that you can be successful in tennis. The only way to overcome the pecking order is to learn how to win three in a row. Again, if you don't win the first point of the game, you think about it, you've got to win three in a row somewhere, or four out of five. But it's a beautiful scoring system, because as from behind, you might play gallantly as the underdog. And when you're even, unless you're comfortable winning, you're not going to lead very easily. And most of the time, you'll throw away and play poorly when you're ahead. And those principles in themselves, three in a row is critical to learn. But with the second principle, three in a row starts flow is number one. The next three principles are based on the score. So the one is, when you're behind, remember, be aggressive, courageous when you're behind. When you're trying to come back, stay patient with your fundamentals, but always on the attack. Behind, you have to play aggressive. Behind, you need to ramp up your emotion. You need to do those things that are hard to do when you're behind and you're getting dealt on. You must remain proactive when you're behind. When you're ahead, when you're in the lead, you stick them early in the game, then slowly make them bleed. If you're leading and you go in the set, if you're leading, let's say you're up a break and you're trying to maintain it and you go to the other side, you always need to play that first point aggressive if you can to show your dominance again. But when you're up in the game, remember that when you're ahead, you're going to play a little worse. Your hands won't work as well. And your opponent's behind, so they're going to play a little bit better. So you do not give them quick targets. Serving patterns when you're ahead usually are more body serves, more serves to set up the second point. If you're returning, usually it's four balls across the body before you even try to attack. Some people will say, no, you got to take a risk. No, the downside of just risking is pushing the edge of the envelope too bad, and then you collapse in the whole game. But you've got to, it doesn't mean when you're ahead that you push. I used to call it breakdown points. And players misunderstand. They think, oh, I just play safe. No, it's called delayed pressure. Delayed pressure means you're doing big shots, big targets when you're ahead. Big shots, big targets when you're ahead. When you're behind, you attack much more. When you're even, you basically need to go with what your favorite thing is. Regular stuff is good enough. When you're even, you go with your fundamentals. You want it, what your favorite game is. So the rules, again, go back to conversion. Three in a row starts to flow. When you're behind and trying to come back, aggressive with fundamentals, patient with your fundamentals, but always on the attack. When you're in the lead, you stick them early in the game, then slowly making them bleed. Now, always when you're ahead, remember it's pressure. You've got to force errors. Do not just play safe or you'll lose momentum that way. You've got to stay attacking, but in a different way. Big shots, big targets. Stay with good decisions. Take your time when you're ahead. When you're even, the rule's not that really that tough. Regular stuff is always good enough. Those are four rules. Now, the other things that are critical with momentum control are the fundamentals based on what has just happened. I call them action-reaction laws. Action-reaction laws. Now, it's this is the way you have to look at it. There's only four ways that the point ends. It's the opponent's good, the opponent's bad. You're good, you're bad. That's simple. Now, these make a difference for how you should play the points. And you could look at boxing as an example with punching and counterpunching. You can look at a lot of different sports as what you should do. Great coaches see the opportunities with action-reaction. How many times have you seen a fumble in football and the first play that the coach that recovers the ball, Bobby Bowden used to do this masterfully at Florida State games, they throw a pass. They'll throw a pass. So his good or his bad, usually you play aggressive. And we always say, after his bad mistake, a quick point you try to take. So they fumble the ball, you throw the ball. If they make a bad mistake, I'll have the players go after a bigger serve. I'll have the players go to the net. I'll have the players cross in doubles. But we run quick pressure plays when after their mistake. And if they've hurt you, if they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. In other words, you've got to neutralize their offense by neutralizing their confidence. If a player aces my player and then he misses the first serve, a lot of times I'll have them come to the net on the second serve to neutralize that ace. And so if a player hits a winner, I will do the next aggressive thing. So if they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. If they make a bad mistake, a quick point you try to take. Last two things, my good, my bad. If I've hurt them and they started to bleed, delayed pressure to fester the wound is all I really need. And I know these are not good rhymes, but I had to make them up working with college kids for so many years. They don't remember. College kids don't remember anything until it's tied with an emotional experience. They just pounded with information. Now, it's like drinking water out of a fire hose, and you got to get them to drink the right water. And so I got to make up rhymes. So that's my excuse, my disclaimer, I would say. So if I've hurt him and it started to bleed, delayed pressure to fester the wound is what I really need. Then the last one, if my bad shot has me in a fret, regroup with my fundamentals and never start until I'm set. In other words, my good, my bad, I go to my fundamentals. My good, my bad. If I hit an ace or if I double fault, next serve is a body serve, but you got to make a first serve. If I make an unforced error, I have the players grind. If they hit a winner, if my player hits a winner, I have them grind. And usually, how do you put this all together now? And I want to get in this in depth, but I need to show you my 75% chart. And what it means is that three-fourths of the time you're going to play with what you do best. But there's that 75% rule, and putting it all together means that here's the three variables: my natural style, the score, and the action reaction guidelines. Now, listen to what I'm saying now. You've got to sort of get a picture in your head. But if a player is a delayed pressure player, now that's their base. That's the way that they like to play. They're a counterpuncher and a grinder, for example. Now, most of the time, they like playing delayed pressure, so that's their base. So what you have to do in order to decide how to play, you match up the score guideline with the action-reaction guideline, and that tells you what to do. For example, my favorite style is delayed pressure. Well, let's say that I'm ahead in the game. Ahead in the game means play delayed pressure. Okay. So I like delayed pressure. That's my favorite style. I'm ahead in the game. And let's say action-reaction. I just made an unforced error, which says delayed. Well, delayed, delayed, delayed. You play delayed pressure point. This works beautiful. So let's say that my same situation, I'm a delayed pressure player, I'm ahead in the game, but let's say that the action-reaction is a quick pressure thing. Let's say they hurt me, they hurt you. Okay, I'm ahead in the game, delayed pressure, I like delayed pressure, but they just hurt me. Two out of three says delayed pressure. I'm going to play delayed pressure. Being ahead in the game is paramount over that. Now, let's say that I like delayed pressure, the third situation, but I'm behind in the game, which says quick pressure. However, I just hit a winner, or I made an unforced error. That's delayed pressure. So here, two out of three says delayed. So you see that all three of those are delayed, delayed, delayed pressure. What's changed? The score's a little different, and then the action-reaction's a little different. So the fourth variable, you've got to understand, here's what has to happen for my delayed pressure player to go to the net quickly or play quick pressure. They have to be behind, which says quick pressure, and let's say the opponent has just hurt them or they've hurt themselves. So my style is delayed. The score says quick. The situation says quick. Two out of three says quick. I've got to go to the net here. Now listen, you delayed pressure players. If you don't go to the net, you will always lose to the player who grinds better than you. You always lose also to that player who is a quick pressure player and whose offense overcomes your defense. No play unless you know that you have to go to the net and play quick pressure 1/4 of the time. So quick pressure players, it's the same, but just a little bit different. You've got to know it's overloaded 3/4 of the time you're going to be quick pressure. So if your favorite style is quick pressure, and then the score says delayed, but action-reaction says quick, 2 out of 3 say quick, you're going to do it. If you're behind in the game, which says quick pressure, and action-reaction says quick, they just hurt you, you're going to play quick pressure. If you're behind in the game, and delayed pressure maybe is the action-reaction, 2 out of 3 say quick. So 3 out of 4, you're going to do quick pressure. It has to be that you are ahead in the game, and they just made an unforced error. Or you're ahead in the game, and you just made an unforced error. Or you're ahead in game, and you just hit a winner. That's when you do quick. Gain things like 40 love ahead, and you've just hurt them. Then you're going to do delayed pressure. So we're going to go off the air here in a second, but I'm going to stay on for about one more minute to get through this. So hang with me here a second. Next week, I'm going to go to the momentum mount where you're 7 different situations. You're either tied, 1 ahead, 2 ahead, 3 ahead, or 1 behind, 2 behind, 3 behind. 3 ahead or 3 behind are always delayed pressure, folks. Look, we got to go. Time's about out. Up. This is Chuck Creasy, and folks, dive in there and say those things that need to be said. Remember, it is your responsibility. It is your privilege, but it is also your responsibility and your duty to speak up and say those things that need to be said. Made in America, born in a hotland.
Made in America. Made in America.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. Stand up, speak out. You're a United States of American citizen. Boy, are we lucky to live here. God bless each and every one of you. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.